And that was Bob Dylan, a pawn in their game. There were so many murders then as now of black Americans. And always it needed to be we needed the comments of somebody who turned out what he was in his songs. His lyrics were so well put together that the Nobel Prize Committee chose him as for the literary prize this year. It's helpful to have the song about Medgar Evers available to us, and probably more accessible than a novel, a short story, reference to an old play. This is CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host, and Phil Conlon is here. Phil has something to tell us about, but before I say that, I think we better mention the news today. Bob White, leader of the man who founded, became the first president of the Canadian Auto Workers. He had been the American, the vice president of the United Auto Workers, a very old and established and highly respected industrial union, which, you know, it's one of the unions because they make cars, and cars are us. And I had mentioned Dylan a while ago. One of the times Dylan got in hot water with his fans is he did a commercial for American Automobiles, and he said the closing line is, "We'll make your cars." That was Bob Dylan. It was a Super Bowl ad, by the way. So it's a very important union in North America, and in some years back, maybe Phil, you could date it for us, but the decision was made to remain fraternal, good friends with, associated with the United Auto Workers, but they decided it was time to have Canadian Auto Workers. And the personality that people associated with that move was most important one was Bob White, although Dennis McDermott certainly was a figure in it. Dennis McDermott was at that time the head of the Canadian Labor Congress. You might notice there's a little continuity there. People who former Canadian Auto Workers and become Canadian Labor Congress leaders. Look it up in your Funk and Wagnall, as they say. So Bob White had died, and we might talk about him later in the show. And then also Vitaly Churkin, the Russian ambassador to the United Nations, died, I think, today or last night in New York. Given all the tensions and creeping paranoia, et cetera, this will be noted because his last public appearances were in rather sharp exchanges at the United Nations with his American counterparts. This is CAOT 89.5 FM. Phil Conlon is here, and Phil, we are concerned about the war in Syria and the fighting there and how this might be resolved to protect the lives of starting with Syrians, but then everyone else who's involved. And listeners to the show will know that we have been critical over the years of the role played by so-called human rights organizations, so-called, who are, one of whom is Amnesty International, and the other is Human Rights Watch. Amnesty has its headquarters in London, which, as you know, London is the center of human rights in the world, and they produce the very best of everything, missiles, bombs. And the other one is, of all things, located in Washington. And yet there's a kind of salivating idiocy amongst liberals and people who think they believe in peace to every time Amnesty says something, every time Human Rights Watch says something, that becomes the gold standard of objectivity and whatnot. And before I call on Phil, lastly, I'll say that when they do issue reports, it's often followed by cries in parliaments and congresses, people bounding, reading from the reports and urging that we bomb somebody. It was Iraq once, we'll go into that, and today it's Syria. So we believe that you should take great care when either of these agencies tell you they have a story. So, Phil, what is the latest from Amnesty?
Well, Amnesty released a report which they called Human Slaughterhouse, Mass Hangings and Exterminations at Saidnaya Prison. Saidnaya Prison is in Syria, and the report is very inflammatory. I mean, if you read it...
The title, I would say...
It accomplishes
the author's purpose.
Absolutely. So, but this is what Rick Sterling, who's writing Consortium News, has to say about the report, and he's read it and analyzed it. He says, the Amnesty report fails on all counts. It relies on third parties. It does not gather its information from different points of view, and it did not cross-check with all parties. The report's conclusions are not based on primary sources, material evidence, or Amnesty's own staff. The findings are solely based on the claims of anonymous individuals, mostly in southern Turkey, from where the war on Syria is coordinated. Amnesty gathered witnesses and testimonies from only one side of the conflict, the Western and Gulf-supported opposition. For example, Amnesty consulted with the Syrian Network for Human Rights, which is known to seek NATO intervention in Syria. Amnesty liaised with the Commission for International Justice and Accountability, an organization funded by the West to press criminal charges against the Syrian leadership. These are obviously not neutral, independent, or nonpartisan. If Amnesty were doing what its Secretary General claims the organization always does, they would have consulted with organizations within or outside Syria to hear different accounts of life at Saidnaya Prison. Since the report has been released, the Angry Arab has published the account of a Syrian dissident, Nizar Nayef, who was imprisoned at Saidnaya. He contradicts many statements in the Amnesty report, the type of cross-checking that Amnesty failed to do for this important study. Amnesty's accusations that executions were, quote, extrajudicial, is exaggerated or false. By Amnesty's own description, each prisoner appeared briefly before a judge, and each execution was authorized by a high government leader. We do not know if the judge looked at documentation or other information regarding each prisoner. One could argue that the process as described was superficial, but it's clear that even if Amnesty's allegations are true, there was some kind of judicial process. Amnesty's suggestion that all Saidnaya prisoners are convicted is false. Amnesty quotes one witness who says about the court, the judge will ask the name of the detainee and whether he committed the crime. Whether the answer is yes or no, he will be convicted. But this assertion is contradicted by a former Saidnaya prisoner who is now a refugee in Sweden. In this news report, the former prisoner says the judge, quote, asked him how many soldiers he had killed. When he said none, the judge spared him. This is evidence that there is a judicial process of some sort and that there are acquittals.
Yeah.
So read Rick Sterling's article in Consortium. The whole article is
Well, you say that's in Consortium News.
Yeah, yes.
Am I right?
That's right, yes.
I think it also, you can find Rick's writing on this at in Global Research. Mm-hmm. Global Research, by the way, is a real alert, vigilant, even vigilante organization. It gets on the – but – and I'm very glad. Thank you, Phil, very much for that, reading that, because people need to be – when it's a problem of somebody yelling fire in a theater or – try to break up a meeting by an alarmist report that everybody's got to get outside. We've got to go do this. It's urgent. To my mind, you couldn't be more irresponsible than the title they put on it. You use the word slaughterhouse. I mean, you forget any concept of state, judicial process. they're making, on the face of it, by the way, absurd allegations. The big issue in Syria today, one of the big issues, is there is an existing state. And it is the wish of the Prime Minister of Britain, it is the wish of the President of the United States, that that state be broken up. If you say, as they do, the President must step down, you're trying to destroy someone else's state. You didn't put that President there. It wouldn't be your business. To use only the president's name or title shows that your intention is destructive, because you're not actually assessing a political situation involving such little matters as and who would succeed him. And if you say him, do you mean also his party? When George Bush said that Saddam needed to be destroyed, All they said was Saddam. And as you recall, Phil, Saddam was Hitler. They pointed that out to us. Hitler was Saddam. Saddam was Hitler. Hitler, Hitler, Saddam, 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 Hitler, Hitler. And but when they struck with immense, devastating force on the people of Iraq, they turned out they meant the political organization of Saddam Hussein. They meant the way the country was run. So if you destroy the means, the way in which it is run, you have left the people with nothing. You left them with, you know, a beggar's bowl, basically. There is no – you've destroyed it. And they told us that they were actually proud of themselves. And, you know, one of the little things that happened, as we know, is that they – also destroyed the decided to undo the army completely. Well, if you do that, there are defensive and security functions provided by an army. So if you take it apart, what are you going to replace it with? So Amnesty, by the way, they don't, of course, deal with this kind of thing. I've been to Amnesty's offices. I was invited, and I gave a little spiel. And we were all quite cordial with each other. But it was like visiting a government, I must tell you. And also, I've liked the fact that's been pointed out, including by this man that we call the Angry Arab. Actually, he's a distinguished professor. But, you know, like Bob Dylan, I'm glad he has a second profession, second role. And I say this with enthusiasm because I actually don't agree with him on many things. But I do respect much of what he does. And he and others have pointed out that the head of Human Rights Watch has been in office longer than President Assad, many years longer, actually. He's outlived the Assad, right? And how does he get to be that? None of us are ever invited to the big convention to decide that we want to be the human rights fighters and maybe have any kind of – there is no electoral system. This is a payroll system. So you're working for somebody. And he decides. And so you have a guy named Roth who has this perch. And under the perch it says human rights. He makes a really nice salary. And he pontificates in a way that seems to make the American government basically happy. Once in a while, in order to, we call it, to maintain some credibility, he will suggest America adjust its policies. But he never says, of course, they need to be overthrown or bombed, you know, or call on NATO to come
in. And the report makes clear that people who are the victims of the so-called slaughterhouse are people who were killing Syrian soldiers. Well, I can tell you that in Britain we
used to have – Well, that's the allegation.
That's right. That's the allegation. Now, in Britain there were people used to kill British soldiers, and the British government crushed them, right?
They do.
Raided their neighborhoods, arrested their relatives, threw them in special prisons under special laws. I mean, you don't get to do that, right,
no,
in Britain.
Don't. In no society on earth do you get to walk around and do it. Yeah. No, you're quite right. Now, by the way, I spoke to Rick Sterling earlier in the day just to kind of check some facts. Again, I'll go back to this one. I urge all our listeners to make themselves a human rights organization because apparently it's a lovely title and you can win all kinds of cheap respect. When you couldn't – you may be that you're not worth 2 cents on this human rights, but you may get that title nailed down. Now, incidentally, there are countries – China, for example, has looked into America's human rights record. You know, oddly enough, the New York Times didn't publish that. They did point out there seems to be a disproportionately high number of black Americans in American prisons, which can't be accounted for except by racism. And they say there also seems to be an exceptionally high number of Native Americans, which can't be accounted for except by racism. The New York Times didn't find that alarming. And nothing alarmed there. So nothing to see here, as they would say. You know, just yellow ribbons and keep walking. And what are you staring at? Come here. I want to see your papers. So that's all we're asking here at the Taylor Report is a minimum degree of self-respect, a mind that says, let me consider the evidence. And in the case of Amnesty and Human Rights Watch, if you look, read the fine print, you'll turn out there usually isn't any, particularly if they're on their high horse and they're anxious to have somebody bombed. And I'll end on this point because later we're going to be talking to Zafar Benghazi, who remembers this too. But sometimes, Phil, I'm sure you agree, is that the best thing you can bring to a meeting is a memory. So here's the memory. The Bush Sr. was thinking about whether or not to attack Iraq. This is not little Bush. This is big Bush, old man Bush. And he said he hadn't decided, although he did decide that Saddam was already Hitler, but he hadn't decided what to do. And this was over the matter of Kuwait. And so Amnesty International appeared at a hearing, a United States congressional hearing, sitting alongside a young woman who identified herself as a Kuwaiti nurse. The Kuwaiti nurse wept, and she's quite emotional, because she had seen Iraqi soldiers taking babies off, what's that machine?
The incubators.
An incubator.
Tearing the incubators from the
taking
wall.
Taking the baby out of the incubator, throwing it on the floor, a human child, and then taking the incubators back to Iraq, which didn't have them because of the already imposed sanctions of the American government. And, well, that made the front pages of all of America's newspapers. And Bush Sr. said that his wife had happened to see that. And his wife was so upset that she said, George, you've got to do something. So George said he would. And he bombed the bejesus out of the Iraqis. And it led to some very ugly slaughters because America controlled the skies. When you control the sky, the other guy is going to – it's going to be terrible devastation. And – of course, the detail is that she was not, it turned out, a nurse from Kuwait. She was the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador, and she lived not in Kuwait. And she might have actually been from Qatar, but at any rate, it didn't really matter. She was not what she was represented as.
She lived in Washington, actually.
And everybody said, oh, well, you know, but we were right to do it. You notice how America is very comfortable. They didn't find weapons of mass destruction, which also Amnesty and Human Rights Watch were alarmed about. So, you know, in show business, you know, they warn you, if you go to a circus or a carnival, watch out for guys who come and say, hey, pal, you ever played this game over here? Come here, I want to show you something. That's called a shill. And he'll say, the fix is in. I can show you how to do this. And so you're looking at the guy who's saying, come in here, I want you to buy a ticket. And you're saying, no, I don't want to buy a ticket. But the guy next to you says, hey, I can get that ticket for half price. I know something special. And you will get more out of that ticket than you thought you would. So then you say, okay, you believe the shill. Well, that's all Human Rights Watch and Amnesty are. They're just shills. And they are not democratic organizations. They were not organized by the people. And they are, yes, financed. Financed. I'll repeat that. Financed by the U.S. government, in the case of Human Rights Watch, and the British government in the case of Amnesty. They don't pull the money out of the sky. Most of the money, it's true they ask you for money. You know, you should do it. That's part of making a sucker out of you. Oh, we need your 50 cents. If you don't send them the 50 cents, they ain't going to shut down, folks. They're going to go and their pig pal is going to say, okay, we'll pay. But the idea, you put money in, do you think you have anything to say about it? You don't have anything to say about it. And when they promote wars, in my opinion, that's very close to a criminal exercise. At least I'll put it on a moral plane because I'm not interested in politics per se. That is corrupt. People who make good salaries to put out reports that are dubious are not people we should have anything to do with. We're going to hear a little bit of Lee Morgan, and we'll come back, and we will talk to Zafar Benghazi about the fighting in Syria.